Wrapping up a series that we've just entitled Sacred Pace. We live in a culture that likes to accomplish, that likes to do, that was kind of, America's built on that. And so there's some good things in that, like hard working and set goals and achievement and things, but also it can become all encompassing. We can keep going and keep pressing. And so even this time of year, it's New Year's, we get resolutions like, hey, I'm gonna add these things, I'm gonna start doing these things. And then sometimes I look at my life and I'm just like, I can't add or start doing anything else. It's just already fast. It's already full. It's already busy. And so what does it look like to start even the year of, what are some things that we need to slow down on? What are some things we need to stop? What are some things that we can find rest in? And God gives us things that we can do. And so we've been doing this series called Sacred Pace. It stems from a book called The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry. And in it, John Ortberg, a pastor out in California, asked Dallas Willard, a philosopher. He said, "Hey, what do I need to do to be healthy, to be the person that I want to be?" And he said, "You must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life." He said, "Hurry is the great enemy of our spiritual life today. That we live in a fastness, in a culture, and it is an enemy of our spiritual life." And so what we would want to look at is that, hey, what does it look like? There's a slide for this. What does it look like to live at a pace and with a purpose that reveals that we trust that God is God and that we are not? That we trust that God is God and that we are not. It's one of the great gifts of Christians, of followers of Christ, that we don't have to think that we're God. We don't have to function as God. We're not all powerful, so we can't do everything. We're not all knowing, so we can't know everything. We're not omnipresent, so we can't be everywhere. God's all those things, and we're not. So we can find rest in being human, being who God designed us to be. And today we're going to talk about this practice of simplicity. One author said, "Materialism is an engine for hurry." Materialism is an engine for hurry. And if material is an engine for hurry, kind of like greed is like the gas that just makes the whole thing go. And so it's an issue. It's a thing that we see everywhere. Materialism is just part of our culture. It was interesting. I had two conversations this week that kind of brought this out. I was with a few guys. Maybe it was Thursday night. I knew three of them, and I did not know the fourth. And so I was kind of asking the fourth, like, he was connected. He was a business friend of one of them. And I was kind of asking what he did. He kind of told me the story of starting this company. And he said he started the company. He said it cost him $100,000 to start the company. And now the company's worth $25 million after like something like 12, 13 years. Like, super successful, super cool story. It was great. And then he said, yeah. He's like, I would just like to be able to do about 1 million more a year. And then he goes, if I can do 1 million more a year, like for another year, and then 1 million more after that, and just that. And then one of the other guys, who he doesn't necessarily have like a Christian background, he's not coming at this at a, like kind of a theological or spiritual angle. He just simply asked me, he goes, man, isn't it kind of enough? Like, how much more do you need? And these are like older guys. They're not like, you know, the 30-year-old guy just hanging out. He's just like, but it was a very poignant question. He just said, and the guy, he just didn't have an answer. He just said, like, he just assumed, like, no, like, more is better. And so then it was a interesting, because then he kept talking, and then he shared another thing, and we were talking about kids sports, travel sports, and he goes, you know what, my daughter played soccer. And he's like, you know, I kind of, in it, when I was in the middle of it, I was like, you know, every 4th of July and every Memorial Day and all these different things. And he goes, but I look back at it, and he goes, those were the best 13 years of my life. So it was interesting. Like, he's got this super successful business. He's got all this, the resources, all the things that he needs. And then, but he, you could tell he had this sort of like unrest about him. But then when he was looking back to, like, hey, my time with my daughter, the things that focused on things that were important, the things that mattered, that was the best time of my life. And so he had this thing, though, where you could just tell this unsettledness about him. a second conversation. And I think that just shows a little bit of what the materialism about what greed can kind of do. Another conversation, I'm not going to embarrass you, Fernando and Carolla, although I'm going to talk about you. They are going to share more of this tonight at our kind of vision prayer night. But it was interesting. I was over at their place on Wednesday night and the kids were playing. And we were, they'll share more of their story, but they moved originally from Venezuela, and then they had to move to Panama, and then they moved to the U.S. And then we were talking about, and then now they came here and have gotten into an apartment and it's getting furnished and stuff. And it was interesting because Fernando said, yeah, like when we went from Panama to Venezuela, we had to have everything we wanted in 4 suitcases. Right? You just get 2. And so you get 4 suitcases in a place. So they condense their entire life into 4 suitcases. Like, just take a minute and think about that, like, right now. Right? Entire life into 4 suitcases. And then they went from the Panama to the U.S., and they have Daniel now. So they got 6 suitcases. Right? So they had to do it again. And so they're here, and they got the stuff. And then it was interesting because I don't even know, like I pay attention to stuff. I'm sorry. Fernando goes, and then he goes, what it caused me to do is one, see what really matters. What do you really need? What do you really value? And he said, another thing happened. He goes, it's caused me to be very slow to buy new things. I think really hard. What do I need? Because maybe they're in an apartment and they got a child. And so like, there's not as much space as they had. And so I'm really aware of what I buy and what I need. And this is what he said. He goes, it has been one of the most freeing exercises of my life. And so the one who is acquiring and attaining more and more and just like this unsettledness, and then talking to Fernando and his response to basically dwindling everything down until like what matters has been freeing. Do we see the difference between those things? And so what we're going to look at in this idea of simplicity is what does it look like to have our lives, to have the things that we have and allow them to focus on the things that matter. That allow us to live lives that are healthy and full and good. And so this idea of simplicity, and we're going to be in Luke chapter 12, verses 13 to 21. It's on page 965 of the Bibles. And this idea of simplicity, it's kind of like solitude last week. Remember last week I said, kind of if you're in the under 30, maybe under 40, probably it's like uber popular, but this idea of it's got a cultural kind of cousin. And so with solitude, it's mindfulness. Like if you're on any health podcast or training podcast or any sort of podcast, there's a big push on for mindfulness, just quieting noise. Well, this idea of simplicity, it has got a cultural resemblance as well. And it's the idea of minimalism. Like if you ever read anything lately on like, hey, how do you order your life? What's it all? What's everywhere? Minimalism, right? Just less stuff. Less is more. And so we see it even as a cultural thing. And it's not like to bash culture. It is like, no. Like culture's onto something too. We're living all with the same issue, with the same problem. And the good news is that Jesus speaks into these things. Jesus gives us, hey, this is what is truly life. So let me read Luke chapter 12 to 13. Verse 13 to 21, and then we'll dive in and we're going to look at, again, kind of this pattern of the series, like, hey, what's the problem? And then what's the practice that problem is more? We have a desire for more. The practice, what are the things that Jesus gives us to combat this problem? And then how do we have the power to live it out? So look at Luke chapter 12, verse 13 to 21. It says, someone in the crowd said to him, teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me. So this guy's trying to draw Jesus into a family squabble. But Jesus is too smart for that. So Jesus goes after the core issue. He says, but he said to him, he doesn't answer his question, man, who made me a judge or arbitrator over you? Like this is a family deal, this isn't mine. And he said to them, take care and be on your guard. Against all covetousness or greed. For one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. And he told them a parable saying, the land of a rich man produced plentiful. And he thought to himself, what shall I do? For I have nowhere to store my crops. And he said, so the guy has, he has a good year, right? He has a good year. So that's not the problem. He said, so I have nowhere to store my crops. And he said, I will do this. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods. So again, not a problem. He's like, hey, we got too much stuff. I'm going to build a little bit of barn. And so now here becomes the issue. Here's what Jesus is exposing. He says, and I will say to my soul, soul, you have ample goods laid up for many years. Relax, eat, drink, be merry. So the issue isn't having more stuff. It's what? It's his response to the stuff. Like, I can now kick back. I'm just going to take care of myself. He diverts himself from God and others. He says, but God said to him, fool, this night your soul is required of you, and the things you have prepared, whose will they be? He says, so is the one who lays up for treasure for himself and is not rich towards God. So I want to have some clarifiers, some things that kind of push back, I think, on some things that just people assume about Christianity that aren't necessarily true. One thing I think there is an assumption on is that that possessions and wealth are bad. Like, that's not Christian. It nowhere in the scriptures does it say possessions or wealth are bad. We can just simply look at the life of Jesus to prove that. Jesus was like a tradesman. He had a job, right? He worked. He would have earned a living. He would have had pay. He would have had that. There was the story that Jesus, and what happens, they pour like the perfume on him, right? And they say, what? They're like, what are you doing? That's it. That's a year's wage that you're pouring. That's what, and Jesus doesn't stop her. Jesus is like, no, I'm going to enjoy the gift. I'm going to enjoy this very expensive gift. What else we see in Jesus? We see in Luke chapter 8 that there was wealthy women who supported Jesus and his disciples. So there was people of wealth that were supporting Jesus and what he was doing. Jesus had someone to manage his budget. Didn't do a really good job. His name was Judas. Didn't end well for him. But Jesus had enough that he had to have somebody running his stuff, right? So there's this sort of, like, and even this book brought this out too. When Jesus was crucified, what did they do for his clothes? They bargained for them. Why? Because they had value. They had worth. They would have been expensive. And so there's a sort of myth that Jesus thinks all things are bad, or the material is bad. And it's just not true. Jesus was friends with both the rich and the poor. You look at post-Jesus, Joseph of Arimathea, he gave Jesus a tomb. You know who had tombs? Wealthy people. What did he do? What did Joseph do with it? Gave it to Jesus. Right? The church at Philippi, started by Lydia and a lot of these churches, you know where they started them? In their houses. You know where you start churches? In houses. You know what kind of houses those are? Big houses. Right? And so there's this misnomer in Christianity often that the material is bad or wealth is bad, and it's just not true. Jesus taught on it all the time. There's another sort of misnomer that can be like, okay, wealth is bad, and that poverty is actually good, right? The more holy I am, the more impoverished I will be. And that's just not true either. You can read through the Old Testament. You know what it says? Care for the poor, right? Give to those in need. Why? Because being in poverty is horrible. Anybody else ever been in a point in their life where, like, you just don't have nothing? You don't know how you're going to scrape by. It's terrible. Like, that's not holier. That's not better. Being impoverished is not healthier, good. And then a last thing that I want to kind of push back on is this idea of simplicity. One guy wrote that, isn't that a rich people thing? And the answer to that one is yes. It's a rich people thing. Simple, it's called simple living, right? And what he said in the book is that poor people just call it living, right? And so it's a problem that it's a rich people problem. Now, there's probably, we can even look around a little bit. Okay, I'm not rich. I'm like, no. In this room, we're all rich. Okay, like, we're going to the world standards of this stuff. If you make over $25,000 a year, you're in the top 10% richest people in the world. If you make over $34,000, you're in the top 1% of the richest people in the world. And so we don't kind of fall into that category of of like this. Now, some of us are in different situations. That's it. But is this a thing for people that have stuff? Yes. That's why we need to hear about it. That's why Jesus taught on it so much. And so it is for those that have much. And Jesus warns us of what the problem is. And the problem is a desire for more. Look at verse 15. He says, and he said to them, take care and be on your guard against all covetedness. For one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. And then if you read through his little parable, look at his parable. It's all about him. It says, what shall I do in verse 17? For I have nowhere to store my crops, and I will do this, and I will tear down. They're my barns, and I will store all my grains and my goods, and I will over and over and over again. It is my stuff. I earned it. You see this idea of covetedness and greed permeating through the whole parable. And at the core, that's what the issue is. That's what Jesus is warning us about. That's what the warning is. And covetousness is, one definition is just a greedy desire to have more. A greedy desire to have more. So it's not against having, right? God provides all that we need. It's against this ongoing greedy desire to have more. So it's not about having stuff. It's about having what? Or desiring more stuff. They asked John Rockefeller fame, how much money is enough money? His response, just a little bit more. Right? So there's this idea in covetedness. There's this idea in greed. And we don't have to be John Rockefeller. We can see it in our own lives. If we could just have a little bit more, then we'd be okay. No matter what situation you're on. If we could just have a little bit more, we'd be okay. But it causes us to be rushed. It causes us to be hurried. Psalm 39, verse 6 says this. I loved it. It says, it should be on the screen. In vain they rush about, gathering up possessions without knowing who will get them. The gathering up possessions, the wanting more, this desire, it causes us to rush about. And he says, it's in vain. You know why it's in vain? Without knowing who will get them. So, let's take Rockefeller. He didn't even know the people who's like, what happened to him? Died. What happened to his stuff? Went to a bunch of people. Okay? Like, it just goes to other people. But in vain do we rush about to get more stuff. Again, that materialism is an engine for hurry. And that's the issue. In verse 15b, it says, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. Like, you're not going to find life in it. It won't satisfy. And that's what Jesus is calling us to guard against. Jesus is saying, no, life is found in our relationship with God, in living according to his presence, in living according to his purposes, in seeking out his kingdom, in our relationship with others. Like, that's what matters. Those are things that matter. That's what the guy the other night was saying, hey, that time with my daughter, that was the best time of my life. Why? Because it matters. It was about loving and giving to others and being with others. Life is found when we have a rest and a peace and relationship with God, and that's how we get that. 1 Timothy 6 puts it like this. He says this way. As for the rich in the present age, charge them not to be haughty. That means arrogant. I looked it up. Nor to set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches. What this idea of covetedness and greed, it's setting your hope on the uncertainties of riches. And God loves us enough. He's like, no, you can have it. Just don't put your hope in it. It's going to go away. It's not going to last. But it says to set your hope on God, who what? Who richly provides with us everything to enjoy. He gives us all these things to enjoy, to be thankful for. And we'll get to more of that later. He says they are to do good. This is the loving others part. To do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, thus storing up treasure for themselves as a good foundation for the future so that they may take hold of that which is truly life. Like, doesn't that sound good? Doesn't that sound appealing? To live a life where your hope isn't set on stuff that's going to break and fail you and not satisfy you, but to set your hope on God and trust Him and enjoy the things that He has provided for you. A life where you get to love others and be generous towards them. That's what Jesus wants for us. He says, I want you to take hold of that which is truly life. This chasing about other stuff, it's going to lead to disappointment and hurriedness and not life. And so this is what Jesus says is life. John Mark Comer in the book says this. He says, the gospel of America makes the exact opposite claim. In a nutshell, the gospel or the good news or what we're trying to be sold in America, the more you have, the happier you will be. New dress, new shoes, a new golf club. Like, I didn't even add that one in. He had that one in there. He knew my deal. Okay, that's got to go in the sermon. I'm not really a car guy. I'll get to that in a second. New model of car, bigger home, a promotion, a salary. Happiness is out there. It's just one PayPal click or outfit or gadget or car payment or mortgage away. Out of reach, yes, but barely. I'm almost there. I can feel it. But let me say what we all know. The carrot dangling in front of our noses is attached to a stick. Right? Can we relate to that? Is that reality? Is that true? There's always something else. There's always something newer. There's always something better. There's always more. And so it's attached to a stick. There's going to be something behind it. We'll just stick with the golf. They come out with a new driver every year. It goes further. No, it's like it just goes further into the woods. Like, it doesn't matter. Larry had a rough round last week. And then the other thing is, like, there's newer and better. And then you know what happens? All the stuff breaks. It all breaks. Literally. You know what my week was? This was like starting Wednesday. You guess where I was? Car shop. Broken car. Right? While I was at the car shop, I'm talking to the garage door guy because the garage door is broken. So, got the garage door fixed. I told the boys their birthdays are coming up. And then I was like, hey guys, I got you a new garage door for your birthday. And I was like, look, it gives you access to all of this. And you have bikes, you have scooters, you have golf clubs, you have basketballs. I was like, look, just for a garage door. Will was like, y'all know Will, he was not having any of it. Right? Last night, Karina's at the phone store texting me from the phone store because her phone is broken. She can't talk. So if you try to call Karina and she didn't answer the phone, that's why. And then she goes, well, like, she's like, I got this when we moved here. I've only had it for like 3 years. And he goes, oh yeah, they make them now only the last 2 or 3 years. And she's like, but it's still, I didn't drop it. I didn't put it in water. I didn't, like, it just doesn't work. And he goes, yeah, you just need a new one. She's like, it was $800. To like put this all on top of it, last night, yesterday, Will Weston got some flowers for a butterfly garden. So we're planting the flowers. I'm digging the hole, shovel, cracked right in half. I had a picture of it. I forgot to put it up. The shovel broke. I'm like, are you kidding me? And then this week I had forgotten. I went to put the cart in here and the tire had blown on the little hospitality cart. Like, look, don't put your hope in stuff because it's going to break. It's not going to last. But, this is the problem. In the Western world, materialism has become the dominant system of meaning. Atheism hasn't replaced cultural Christianity. Shopping has. We now get our meaning in life from what we consume. What we have, what we look like. And this is the problem. This idea of materialism, it leads to discontentment, which leads to striving, which leads to hurriedness, which leads to ultimately never being satisfied. And so we got to see, like, this is an issue for all of us. Like, we are, like, our hearts want more, and then the world tells us we need more. I didn't even get into IKEA, which you guys had the pleasure of going to yesterday. A four-hour thing at IKEA, yeah. That sounds like, Lord, we can go play golf this week. You earned it. I was pulling up here this morning, and there was a truck, like a little moving truck, and it had LED lights around the whole thing. Like, it's an advertising truck. And the whole, it was like a billboard like you see at a sports thing. Like, we're being marketed to everywhere. Everybody's saying the more you have, the more you... But Jesus says, no, it won't satisfy. And so if this is a problem, I think we can all agree that it's a problem. Like, what's the practice? And the practice that you see in throughout scriptures is that it's one of simplicity. The old school, like the monks, they just called it frugality. But that doesn't sound as cool anymore, does it? Yeah. Let's be frugal. The updated version is just minimalism. Right? But we'll call simplicity. And in his book, The Celebration of Disciplines, Richard Foster, on simplicity, he said, simplicity is an inward reality that can be seen in an outward lifestyle. So it's an inward reality. We think it's all just external, but it's actually internal. That when your heart is content, when your heart is satisfied, when your inside is at rest, then you don't need to perpetually consume and get more. So it's an inward reality that can be seen in an outward lifestyle. Look at this. Of choosing to leverage time, money, talents, and possessions towards what matters most. And so he's not saying like what? Not once in there does it say material is what? Bad. That's like Eastern stuff. The material is bad. No, like we serve the God that created it all. And he gave it. We're material people. It, again, it's not bad. It's the over-desire for it is bad. Foster said that simplicity involves a life of joyful unconcern for possessions. Doesn't that sound better? An unconcern for possessions. Like, I have them. I'm just not all too concerned about them. Because we have on one side kind of like this aesthetic, Eastern, like a little bit stingy, like that's true life. And that's true. That can get very legalistic. And like stuff is bad. It's just easier, right? Just say all stuff is bad. All material is bad. Like, no, that's not biblical. I also think it's interesting. Jesus never gives us like a have this much, does he? He always just tells stories. The one guy, he's like, oh, sell everything you have. Next guy, sell half of what you have. Next guy, he doesn't tell him to do anything. And Zacchaeus goes and just gives it all away, right? And so Jesus doesn't ever just say, hey, do this. Why? Because we will become legalists. We will become like, God, I am going to do this for you. And then we want this, but it's a heart issue. It's an unconcern for possessions. So he's not saying like, hey, this aesthetic, like all material is bad, is good. But he's also saying like, hey, this materialism, this finding your identity and meaning and purpose and value in what you have, that's not healthy either. There's somewhere in the middle that the gospel allows us to live. One writer said, simplicity is the intentional promotion of the things we most value. So we actually take the things that bring life and give us life and bring us joy and bring other people joy. So it's the promotion of those things and the removal of everything else that distracts us from them. How much of us like are we consumed by the things that don't bring us any joy? Like, how many times do we put away the same stuff? And so simplicity isn't living with nothing. It's living with less. It isn't poverty or boring, bare, bland things. It's not joyless. It's not materialist life. It's having less stuff. So we have more time and more money and more resources for what matters most. And Jesus was talking about this stuff all the time. Look at verse 21. He says, so is the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God. He's saying, hey, if you put your trust in that, like, it'll rip your life away. It'll rip your soul away. It'll divert your attention from God into things that don't matter. You can flip verse 21. And in this idea of simplicity, according to Jesus, it's a posture of being rich towards God and not compiling treasures for ourselves. It's a posture of being rich towards God, using the things that God provides in ways that honors him, in ways that shows that he is what we desire, and not compiling treasures for ourselves. And Jesus was teaching on this stuff all the time. If you just go to the next verse, look at verse 22. And he said to his disciples, "Therefore I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, what you will eat, nor about your body and what you will put on." He's saying, have a joyful unconcern for possessions. But he doesn't say because they're bad. No, a little further down, if you keep reading, he says, because your Father knows you need them. And he'll provide them for you. So you don't have to be concerned by them. Because why? God will give you what you need. Right? We got a new garage door opener. Pray don't get a new phone. Right? I may not get a new shovel. Less yard work. Actually, I like yard work. I shouldn't lie. I'm getting a new shovel. Your Father knows that you need them. He will give them to you. Matthew 6:24, it says, you cannot serve both God and money. Acts 20 says, it is more blessed to give than to receive. And so we need to ask, like, what if Jesus is right? What if this idea of simplicity, of valuing the things that matter, of enjoying the things that bring joy, what if he's right? What if it's the better, freer way to live? What if it allows us to be rich towards things that matter? What if it allows us to not be anxious? What if it allows us to serve God and not serve stuff? What if it allows us to live a life of blessing through giving? Isn't it the funnest thing in the world to give? It's great. Like when you get that thing that the person like, oh man, I wanted that. I would have never bought that for myself. It's amazing. Or when somebody has like legitimate needs and you can just like, hey, you know what? I have one of those. Here you go. It's a great way to live. Mary Ellen and Larry and Beth had a toaster oven. Like, you know what I ate this morning? Blueberry waffles out of the toaster oven. I love that toaster oven. They're like, we have an extra toaster oven. You guys don't have one of those? They're amazing. Here's one. Yes. I love it. It's a great thing to be able to give. He says it's more blessed to give than receive. What if the formula of more stuff equals more happiness is really bad math? What if the whole deal is just kind of a lie? What if the formula is really more stuff can lead to more stress? What if the formula is really more stuff can equal less time with what matters most? And that's what Jesus is driving at. He wants us to take hold of that which is truly life. He's like, don't spend your life taking hold of things that won't bring life. And this idea of simplicity or whatever you want to call it, it's just a life that you're not consumed by materialism, and it ultimately brings freedom. And so here's just some, I'm like, Jesus doesn't get into specifics, so I don't go where Jesus doesn't go, all right? So I'm not getting into specifics, but there are some things that we see throughout scripture that allow us to actually start cultivating this life, to start saying, hey, what am I going to do? And so Jesus in this idea gives us the freedom to enjoy or take hold of that which is truly life. And the first thing that we can do is just to receive what we have as a gift. You don't need a guilt trip because God's blessed you, because God's given you good things. Thank you, God. I look at my life all the time and think, I don't deserve any of this. I look at my kids, I look at my wife, I look at a house. I don't deserve any of it. Like, when I lived according to my own, I'm king, me and this guy in the parable, and nothing that mattered. Jesus, he gave me all this stuff. Thank you. Receive it. Enjoy it. Some of you guys come from places you never dreamed that you would be where you are. Receive what you have as a gift. The second thing we can do is that we can trust God will care for what we have and what we need. We don't have to continually be worried and grasping and going and trying to get more. Just the next thing. We can have a rest and trust that God will take care of us. Has God taken care of you? Maybe some of you are in a bump in the road, or you're like, maybe you're in the, like, hey, we'll get to what Paul says about it in a minute, but it's been difficult. I don't know where it's going to come from, but what happens? God takes care of us. We can trust him. Does he give us some things, some principles and ways to live in order for him to take care of us? Yes. But we can trust that God will give us what we need. He will care for us. And a third way to really live simply and with freedom, make what you receive available for others. Be generous. Have a joyful unconcern for what you have. Be willing to give. Genesis 12, I have blessed you, to Abraham, to be a blessing to all nations. We stole it from John Piper, but he says we're a conduit, not a cul-de-sac. Right? Don't be a cul-de-sac. You want freedom, you want joy. God's blessing doesn't end on you. Does he give you what you need? Yeah, enjoy it. And then what? Help other people enjoy. I love this about our church. I love this about our church family. Most generous church I've ever been a part of. It's amazing. Sometimes it's a little sad. I can't share all the stories, but I get to see it. Know it's happening. God's providing for and caring for and in ways that we don't even get to see or know. And we get to be a generous people. It's true life. It's more blessed to give than receive. And so we can frame our lives around these things. Like, enjoy the things that you have. Trust that God has given you enough. If you're in need, he'll give you what you need. And then make what you receive available for others. So how do we do this? How do we have the power to do this? The answer here in every church is always the gospel. It's through Jesus. It's the only motivation that would ever even compel us to want to live this way. And even more so to sustain us in living this way. Because this can all sound good. I mean, like, there's a whole minimalist movement, right? But usually it's so things can end on yourself. But the power of the gospel allows us to live this way. Like, this ties to God. This ties to the story of the scriptures. This whole problem and solution. If you go back to the beginning, in the beginning God created what? Everything. You know what he did with everything? Gave it to Adam and Eve. Right? He says, everything is yours. Except for what? But one thing. But what were Adam and Eve? Discontent. They coveted. They had what was the definition? A greedy desire to have more. They coveted. Right? They listened to the lie that says, if you have this, you will be like God. You will arrive. You'll get a hold of the carrot. And instead of ruling over creation, instead of enjoying the entire material world that God had given them, Adam and Eve become ruled by creation. They move from being over creation to being slaves of material things, slaves of creation. This is our problem. We're enslaved. It's the same as Adam and Eve. We think the same thing. If I can just get, fill in your blank, then I will be satisfied. Then I will be like God. I'll have everything. And thankfully, the Bible doesn't end in Genesis 3, right? The good news, what happens? Jesus, what? Leaves everything. Jesus had everything. And he left it. And he came into our physical world. And he lived perfectly. And we see on the cross, what does he do? He literally sheds everything he has. He's hung naked on the cross. For us. For our sin. For the shame that we're trying to cover up with all the stuff. And he defeats Satan. He defeats sin. He defeats death. And he resurrects. You know what he does when he resurrects? Gives us everything. I'm going to give you my spirit. I'm going to make you a son. I'm going to make you a daughter. I'm going to give you everything that you will ever need. You're going to have God as your Father. 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verse 9. For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was what? Rich. Yet for your sake, he became poor. He lost everything so that you, by his poverty, might become rich. When we're in Christ, we have everything we need. We can be satisfied. Philippians 4, the Apostle Paul, he says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Right? Some basketball player made that more famous. Right? And that's a verse that gets used to what? Get stuff. I can go make a lot of money. I can go get this house. I can go build a successful career to get money, to get more stuff. But you know what he was talking about when he says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me? Contentment. You go right above it. It says, not that I am speaking of being in need, for I have learned in whatever situation I am to be content. I know how to be brought low, and I know how to abound in any and every circumstances. I have learned the secret of facing plenty and hunger, abundance and need. I can do all things through him who strengthens me. It's in Christ that we can live this sort of life. And if we have a lot, we know how to act. If we have a little, we know how to act. We'll close with this. John Mark Comer put this great promise, this great truth. He says, the truth is you can be happy right here, right now, through Christ who strengthens me. Meaning through investing your resources in ongoing relational connection to Jesus, in investing your resources in what matters, you can live a rich and satisfying life, whether you are rich or poor, single or married, infertile or counting the days until your four kids are out of the house, crushing it at your dream job or at a minimum wage J-O-B. Right now, you have everything you need to live a happy, content life. You have access to the Father, to his loving attention. When we find our rest there, when we are content to be a son of God, to be a daughter of God, to trust in the King, we're free. We're free to give our resources to what matters, to spend our time with our relationship with God, to spend our resources to further the mission of God, to spend what we have for the good of others. And so we'll move into this time of communion, and we can